Hello, hello, and welcome to Filmmakers Uncut, the podcast that brings leading industry filmmakers, videographers, and photographers to help grow your skills. Today, we're here with Alan. How you doing, Alan?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I usually go off with a starter question, which is just pretty much talking about yourself. So for people who don't know you, can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my name is Alani Sochanu. I'm an Israeli born Israeli born, but Canadian, currently living in Canada and Toronto. I'm a filmmaker, visual artist. I also am a creative director. I mostly direct commercials and music videos and title sequences. And I've been directing for the last like 14 years, I want to say. And I co-own a creative studio called Reactive in Toronto, which is a motion design and animation studio. And that's kind of it in a nutshell.
That's very cool. Sorry for messing up your name. It's Alan.
Yes. Yeah, all good. Alan. It's fine. It's I feel like I messed up your name when we started. So it's very good.
Yeah, no worries. So for people, you said you do, do you do mostly directing? Is that what you were kind of started with and mostly do now?
It's not what I started out doing. I started, I guess I kind of started out directing, but also mostly made my living as a VFX artist and later motion designer. That was kind of early days, sort of straight out of school. I went to what was formerly known as Ryerson, now known as Metropolitan University in Toronto. It was, so I started out as mostly kind of like a more of a post guy. That's sort of was my way into directing. I was always directing short films and like little music videos kind of as I was coming up, but I wouldn't say that I was like professionally directing until about a few years in. And my background really is in, like I said, visual effects, animation, post. I was an editor for a while as well. That was kind of my start.
That's very interesting. You don't hear like too many people who go from visual effects and post-production to actually like directing. Usually I feel like It's the opposite way. People go into directing first. How did that happen?
How did like kind of the transition going from post to directing? How did
that happen? Exactly. Yeah. Was there like at one point you were like, hey, I'd rather be directing, or hey, maybe I should try this?
I mean, I was always kind of directing and editing a lot of my own work, even when I was doing it in school and I was doing short films in school and stuff. But really professionally where it changed was I was sort of kind of picking up a lot of like early on in my career, I was picking up a lot of post-production jobs just from like Craigslist and Mandy.com, if anybody remembers that website. I would edit for a lot of other directors, and there was one project, I want to say in like 2007, I just graduated, where I was essentially the editor. I found literally a posting on Craigslist. Somebody was looking for a VFX artist to help do some green screen work on this music video. He wanted, the director wanted me to come out on the shoot as well and kind of help film it. So I went on set for that shoot, and the video was kind of all over the place, but then as we were cutting it and as I was doing the visual effects, the artist themselves was kind of getting more and more interesting. I can give them a shout out. It's Kelly Clipperton. He's from Toronto's artist. He has had a band called Kelly and the Kelly Girls. That was kind of one of my earliest music video experiences. And what had happened was I did all the visual effects for that music video, and Kelly really, really liked it, so much so that I guess he felt like I had a stronger vision for what the video needed to be than the actual director. No slight at the director. They just weren't seeing as eye to eye, I guess. And Kelly was really the one who was like, oh, I want you to direct my next video. I feel like you kind of get me and you kind of understand what I want to do. And so we collaborated on a music video after, and that was kind of my first, like, I wouldn't say professional music video, but it was the first music video that I directed that kind of looked like a music video, if that makes sense, looked like a real music video. So that was sort of the moment where I was just like, oh, you know what? I can do this as a director, or at least I felt like at the time. And I've sort of been directing ever since. I don't know if there was like a clear cut transition between the two, because I was always kind of directing while I was also doing visual effects and editing. And so there wasn't like a clear moment where I was just like, oh, I can switch over. I would say that particular video was maybe an example of a situation where I was able to kind of switch between the two roles, but it wasn't like, oh my God, I'm now a director, if that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It's interesting because I feel like a lot of people think they need to go in one direction, but you never know, even at like your professional level at the time, like where everything's going to take you, right? One day, you know, you're doing visual effects, the next it's like, oh, now we're directing. For people who don't really know like what directing is, I'm sure most people know, but could you give like a little explanation of like, you know, what directing is and specifically like what you do as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can give a definition of directing that's going to like satisfy everybody's, desires. I think there's a lot online that you could read about, but I guess for me, what it means is essentially kind of having a cohesive creative and technical vision for a project, and doesn't necessarily mean just visually, but also just in terms of audio, in terms of just the overall aesthetics and how the story is told. And then being able to be the person who not just has that vision, but is able to communicate that vision to everyone on their crew, as well as in my case, I work a lot in music videos and commercials. Like I mentioned, there's oftentimes an ad agency or a client or a record label. So it's being able to communicate that vision to them as well. My job, honestly, like it really involves a lot of creative development, a lot of creative strategizing. I do a lot of creative writing, like as a commercial director and as a music video director, you have to write treatments to kind of sell your concepts. And they're usually kind of driven by a creative. In the case of a commercial, for example, it's driven by an ad agency who kind of presents an idea. And then I have to sort of give the directorial vision, the written treatment that sort of explains how I'm going to execute that sort of original idea that they had. And on a music video, I would get sent a track usually, and then maybe a general direction of what the artist wants. And then it's my job to sort of write out a cohesive creative treatment that sort of outlines what that kind of video is going to look like and feel like, as well as how it's going to be executed. And so in both of those cases, both in music videos and in commercials, that treatment writing phase, it's kind of like the creative writing portion of it. And so I do, that's really kind of where everything starts really. And then from there, it's being able to translate that vision to the screen. And there's a lot of steps in between that are kind of hard to like distill into a sentence, but it basically involves working with collaborators up and down the crew, from production designer to cinematographer, to your editor, to your makeup artist, to, you know, to your style, wardrobe stylist, to pretty much everyone, and be able to communicate your vision, and then also obviously be on set and direct talent. And that's another big aspect of it, which is, you know, working and getting performances out of your actors on screen. So I don't know if that's like a definition of what directing is, but that's kind of like some of what goes into my job. And that's, you know, there's more to it, but I don't know if I could be as concise.
Oh, that was good. That was good. I liked how you explained what directing is to you and, you know, what you do in that position. Because, you know, as there's always in every position, there's things that people like doing and don't like doing and things they do and don't do. And that's kind of what makes them different, you know, at the end of the day. So it's nice to hear, you know, what you're doing. You were talking a little bit about treatments, which I think is like very important to people, because treatments are done in pretty much like every industry at this point. Right, for the like video production side of everything. How did you learn about treatments to begin with? Did you just like learn online, learn it off someone? How did you get good at treatments?
That's a good question. I didn't really know at all about treatments until I started doing music videos. And I really, the most helpful thing for me was, I don't know if it still exists, but there used to be a website called Antville. It was like videos.antville.org, I think. Don't quote me on that. There was kind of, it was sort of a community, like a web forum really for music video directors and creators to post their work. And at one point somebody aggregated a bunch of old music video treatments from like Mark Romanek and Chris Cunningham and Spike Jones. And I was able to kind of look, and those are obviously like sort of God tier directors who have done like really, you know, classic music videos. And so some of their music video treatments were transcribed and put on that website. And so that was kind of one of the earlier places. Now, if you're looking for great examples, I highly recommend checking out a website called We Direct Music Videos. I believe it's WeDirectMusicVideos.com. And they have a treatment database. Some of my treatments are on there as well as a lot of others. You can look at how music video treatments are sort of constructed. There's rarely ones that are similar. Pretty much every director kind of gives their own spin on them. I just kind of got, obviously I got good at it by just doing them, but I also had kind of a foundational understanding of how to structure them by seeing some of those early treatments. And now I think, like I said, if people look up WeDirectMusicVideos.com and they go to the treatment database, you could see a lot of them. And then you can kind of extrapolate from that what a commercial treatment would look like, because they're very similar.
Right. I'm glad we got that out there. Yeah, I think it was a few years for us too before we realized, oh, we need to start making treatments, you know, in order to get these projects, right? And it was never like a thing that was, I guess, like told to us and from anyone. Right. It's just something you come across. And, you know, for new people out there, this might be like the first time they're coming across treatments, but that is how you get, you know, a project presented before you're able to, you know, actually even win the project and even get a budget for it and start doing it.
Yeah, I would say, I was, on that note, I would mention that like, it's sort of standardized in music videos and commercials. It's pretty much expected. Like usually in, you know, on a commercial side, an ad agency would send a rep, you know, their creative brief from their agency creatives. And then those would get kind of sent out to a bunch of production companies who would all put directors forward. They'll send reels forward. And really the next step is that once an agency selects usually three directors that they like out of that pool of directors that they saw out of those reels, they will then brief that those three directors, and those three directors will then go and write treatments to basically pitch their vision for that commercial. And it's similar in music videos, not exactly the same, but very similar in music videos, where director reels will be shown to a record label and then they would ask to see a treatment. And so that part, I think, is a, I don't know if it's going away anytime soon. I think the way that people are doing treatments is sort of changing. You know, when I started, it was kind of just like a PDF document. And now even like, you know, less than, you know, about 10 years later, we're now doing a lot of like interactive treatments with like GIFs and stuff and videos embedded into the treatment. And then I've also seen people, friends of mine, who've done like full-on video treatments where they will cut together like a mood piece. It's almost like they would cut together a video that explains what the actual video is going to look like, if that makes sense. So I think the form of a treatment has evolved a little bit over time, but the idea of needing some kind of piece of media, whether it be a document or some sort of rich kind of glorified PowerPoint presentation of some kind, that explains your vision with a lot of references and visual references, and is very, allows you to be very clear about your tone of voice and how you're going to execute a project and your point of view, I think that's really important for people to kind of get used to and get practice doing.
That's awesome. For how long does it usually take you to make a treatment?
Too long. Usually I like to have at least a week to work on a treatment. I don't always get that much time, especially in music videos. Sometimes you get a call on a Monday and they want a treatment by Wednesday and you kind of barely have a chance to breathe. But generally speaking, I try to get a week. Sometimes I'm lucky I get 2 weeks on a commercial. My treatments are pretty involved. They've got like not only a lot of references, I'll do like a lot of mock-ups, or sometimes I'll do 3D renders of some set design ideas. I'll go pretty intense with my treatments, which is, you know, a double-edged sword. I don't recommend that everyone does what I do, because I've been in situations where I've gone so specific with my vision, with not just my vision, but like I'll put together like 3D mock-ups or stills that are kind of like really specific as to how I want to do it. And it's almost like it's not giving the ad agency too much wiggle room. So they're just like, oh, well, we don't want exactly what he's presenting, but because he's presenting it in such a specific way, we're worried that he might not want to change anything about this treatment. And so I know for a fact there's been at least one project that I pitched on last year that I didn't get because the agency got too scared because they thought the treatment was too specific, like my visuals were too specific. So it could be a double-edged sword. In other cases, it's been great because I was able to, you know, put forward a very clear vision with a lot of either specific mockups or 3D renders, and agency was like, oh, this is perfect. We know exactly what it's going to look like. We love it. Let's go. So it could go either way. But for me, like I said, at least a week, sometimes more, if I can get 2 weeks, that's amazing.
That's awesome. And for people who don't know, like, you're doing a treatment before you even get paid at all. So these ideas, you're just pitching and you're hoping these agencies will pick them up. Do you guys ever keep any ideas like in the back burner? Do you guys have ideas that you keep, and then when companies come forward, you're like, yeah, we already have a treatment or idea for that?
I've recycled some concepts before, but not often. I used to have this thing, especially when it comes to music videos, where I refuse to, like, mentally, I just put my own, that was my own kind of weird thing where I was like, I don't want to reuse a treatment or reuse a concept because I feel like it's unfair to the song that I'm using, and it deserves like a, kind of its own concept. So I oftentimes would try and like come up with a unique concept or a unique approach for every project that it was put in front of me. There's definitely been techniques that I've kind of developed or techniques that we've worked on at Reactive that we've, you know, kind of honed and designed. And sometimes we'll be like, okay, you know what? We've done this mixed media thing with a lot of cut and paste layers. It's a lot of fun. We used it on a Burger King commercial, but man, wouldn't it be cool for a music video? And so, like, you know, I ended up using a similar technique for a music video later on. So yes, there'll be like, I would say techniques, but never like full concepts where I've just taken one concept or idea from one project and applied it to another.
Right. That makes sense. I know you, for regular people, it's very hard to get into the music industry, as we've noticed. Yep. You know, a lot of the times you're getting new artists who really don't have that much of a budget, right? And they're like, hey, can you do my music video? And really, the only, you know, time you can really make good money in music videos is when you're working with those record labels that are able to pay, right, for those musicians, or someone, a musician who's already popular and has his own record label. How would you recommend someone new in music videos getting up to that stage?
I would say I wouldn't necessarily look at music videos as a sort of a goal. I think that's always a risky thing. Like, I don't think doing music videos full time and making a living doing music videos is particularly feasible for most people. There's maybe a handful of people who are making a living doing it full time. That's not because there aren't talented people out there. There's a lot of talented people out there that would. It's just the place that the music industry is in right now, and has been for quite a while, music videos are just not as valuable right now, I guess you could say, which is unfortunate. And so my recommendation is, if you're interested in music videos, do them because you love doing them, not because you want to make money doing them. What you will gain by doing them is you're going to learn a lot about filmmaking. You're going to learn a lot about doing a lot with a little. Because you'll be forced to kind of like create a lot of production value out of not a lot of money. And I think it's a great sort of like place to learn. I mean, I learned a lot about filmmaking just by doing music videos for almost over 10 years, really. And, you know, I've gotten paid well for some music videos, but I would say it's a very small percentage of the music videos that I've worked on that were, you know, really well paid. And I would say that even the videos that I've done that are high budget music videos, I don't think I made a lot of money on those ones, because usually the budget goes right on screen. So even though, you know, I didn't mention it off the top, it might help your viewers, just so for some context, I've directed music videos for Kelly Clarkson, Pentatonix, Maren Morris, Lights, Billy Talent, Finger 11, Sean Hook, many others, but those are kind of the bigger kind of major label acts that I've worked with. And I've pitched on, you know, who knows, however many more. And even on some of those videos that are kind of like for Grammy award-winning artists, I don't think I made a ton of money, or I don't even think I made my rate, quote unquote, on any of those music videos. A lot of those, you know, even when there was money, a lot of that budget ended up going either on screen or into post or whatever. And so just to go back to your question, like my advice would be, honestly, find artists that you like, especially if they're local. I can't stress this enough. If you've got like a local indie artists in your own city, wherever you are, like go see them play live, support their live music, and then offer to collaborate with them. And then like, they're going to want visuals for their music. If you like their music, chances are you'll be inspired to create interesting visuals for them. And it won't really feel like a job. It'll feel more just like, oh, I'm getting to make something cool for a band that I really like. But if they're local and they're indie, odds are that they're not necessarily going to be, you know, super well known. So they're not going to necessarily be working with the top end directors. So they'll be open to working with new directors. That's really how I got started. I would go to like indie punk shows and rock shows in Toronto, and I would just kind of like beg managers to let me shoot their band's music videos, basically. And then once you've got a portfolio of work, like once you've got like, I'd say like four or five good music videos that like are, you know, are really fucking cool, then you can start reaching out to, you know, there's director reps out there in the US and less so in Canada, but I don't know where the majority of the listeners are from, but like, I'll just for argument's sake, use the US. There's a couple of music video reps. You can approach them and say, hey, here's my portfolio. If they like your work, they might decide to kind of put you forward. You can also then reach out to bigger labels via email or, you know, through your mutual contacts and reach out to A&R people or video commissioners at record labels, or artists themselves and be like, hey, I have this body of work. I've done some of these cool music videos. I would say, and then try to kind of get work that way. I think music videos are just my last point on this is that music videos are the culture driving kind of pieces of media. And I'm not saying that you have to be Mr. or Miss or like, I'm not saying you have to be Mr. Cool. Like you have to be the coolest person in the world to do music videos, but they are kind of like, if you want to be doing music videos at a certain level and get those big budgets, like you kind of have to have a great taste and that's a subjective thing. But take a look at the art that's out there and some of the music that's being made. I think the directors that get to do like very high-end major label music videos all sort of live within the certain zeitgeist of creativity. And I just think there's a kind of, I don't want to say cool is hard. It's a hard term to use because cool is also subjective, but you have to kind of be in the scene and really kind of have a really unique point of view and taste and skill to kind of do them at a very, very high level. And so I would say spend as much time getting immersed in that world as well, beyond just like hustling to get the work, like watch music videos. If you want to be a music video, watch a lot of music videos, watch a lot of movies, get inspired, become the best creative you can be, because that's the stuff that's going to help you kind of get more work down the line.
That was some really good advice. I feel like a lot of people will take that advice to heart. Yeah. And we're not huge in music videos as ourselves, as our company, but you know, it is something that we've noticed that, you know, it's very, very hard to get into. And, you know, you letting everyone know that, you know, do it for passion and not for money. Cause you know, that's where it's headed. Cause it does make sense. Right. Cause it's not really like even that much marketing for the artists anymore. Like music videos back in the day used to be, you know, that was one of the only video platforms, is like YouTube, right. Or Much Music, right. Where, you know, people would watch videos. So that was like marketing for them back in the day. But nowadays there's so much better options out there where your marketing budget can go that people aren't going so hard on like music videos. And I feel like they just put it out as like a bonus to their viewers at this point.
Yeah, I think they're such a creative outlet. They always have been, even when they were basically commercials. Because you're right, there was a time where essentially you would hire a production company and a director to do your music video, but that was your commercial. You put it on TV, literally on MTV or Much Music. So it was very much like a marketing tool. Whereas now it still is, but it's more of like a brand building. Like it's more of like a visuals that kind of help build the artist, but one thing that's never changed is that they were always a much more creative avenue for director, I think, that directors than I would say commercials are. And so that hasn't gone away. And I think that you could still make really creative music videos, and you still should make really creative music videos. And so my recommendation to people is to not worry too much about the money as much, you know what I mean? Like, try to get as much money as you can to make the project, but don't look at it as an avenue to make money yourself, and maybe use commercials as kind of that, you know, if you need to, if you feel like you want to be a director who makes money directing, then maybe commercials or branded content or wedding videos or doing something else that is more kind of more of a for hire profitable kind of side of the directing spectrum.
Well said. Totally agree. Earlier on, you said you had a company, correct?
Yes.
You own a company? Mm-hmm. Did you always own that company to begin with, or did you eventually were like, hey, I should maybe make a company?
I went kind of backwards. I don't know. I was, I started pretty much like right out of school. I think I freelanced for a few years as a kind of a VFX artist, and then started this company with my partner, pretty much like, I don't know, we were like in our early 20s. We started it pretty early. What happened was, I wanted to direct, and so we needed to start a company just to kind of house the productions that we were doing, and they were very low budget productions, but we still needed like production insurance and contracts and things like that. And so my partner is very business oriented, and so she was looking to start a business as well, and I was looking to do more directing. So then we were really young. I want to say we were like in our early 20s. I want to say I was 24 or something like that when I started it, I think. And that was just kind of a production thing. In post, I was kind of working as a freelancer doing post work, but there was a music video that I was directing that we got some funding for, and we had a bit of money. So we're like, let's hire this post-production company to do the VFX, because we didn't think that I was good enough to do it by myself at the time. And we hired this post company, and they kind of really sucked, unfortunately. Like, they kind of butchered the video. We didn't really love it. And at that point, I'm like, man, I think I could do this better by myself. And so I started playing around in After Effects with some footage, and I'm like, oh, this actually looks better. And when I did my next music video, I did all the post for it myself. And when I did that, and I realized, oh, this, we could actually do this. We basically kind of like brought both those elements together, like my post and our production kind of together, and Reactive sort of became this like production / post-production company that did both for a while. And then as I grew as a director, we started doing less production with Reactive, and I started working with other production companies that were a little bit more higher tier when it comes to live action work. And eventually we sort of dropped the whole production side, and now Reactive is purely motion design, animation, and I direct with different production companies, live action, I mean. But yeah, it was kind of like, we were just young and dumb, if that makes sense. Like, we didn't know better. We were just like, oh, you know, no, we don't want to get real jobs. We want to just kind of, we want to do these projects. So let's just start this company. And I would say most of it is because my partner, Anna, had a desire to run a business. And I think if it wasn't for her, I don't know if I would have started the company. I don't think I would have had the courage to do it, because I don't have a business background, and I still am terrible with all that stuff, with the money stuff.
That makes sense. I'm definitely, so my business partner, Danny, who owns the other half of the company, he's more of a director himself, and I'm more of the business side. So it totally makes sense to me.
Makes sense, yeah.
As well, right? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I want to kind of get into like acting, directing actors, I would say.
Sure.
How do you typically get performances out of your actors?
Yeah, so this is something, is another great question. And I think it's something that's feels like a complete mystery when you're starting out. And it definitely was for me. And it's still something that I'm working on. I would say that directing talent, directing actors, getting performances is kind of the thing that I'm focusing on now the most. Because I was such a visual director before. And I still am, and I still do a lot of visual effects. But, you know, I don't have an acting background. And like my directing background, again, is more kind of on the job training. I didn't go to like film school in the traditional sense. So I never studied acting or anything. So I'm starting to kind of do all that stuff now and learn all of it. But really my process really comes down to establishing a comfort level with the actors before we ever start filming, and spending as much time as I can with them prior to filming, which doesn't always happen when you're doing music videos or commercials because you don't always have the time. But I try to, even during wardrobe fittings, I'll try and spend time with the actors, and really just get them to a place where they feel comfortable with me so that when we're on set and they're performing, they're not necessarily feeling like, they're kind of working with a friend, if that makes sense. And they're not necessarily trying to, kind of put on a show for somebody who's going to be like very judgmental, which even though I am, and that's kind of my job is to sort of curate their performance a little bit. I want it to feel kind of as comfortable for them as possible. And so that's one element that I think helps a lot is having that familiarity with your actors before you get to set. The other one, it's kind of like a directing 101 thing, but like not giving people like kind of like trusting that actors are actors and they are going to, they know what their job is. So they're going to, you don't need to kind of explain to them how to do it. So like one of the rookie mistakes or early mistakes that I would make oftentimes is like basically like reenact the scene for them and be like, well, do it more like this. And then I would actually like kind of do it, or like I would read a line a certain way that I wanted them to read the line, which is a big kind of like, I'd say most actors don't like that. And I totally understand why. Because they know how to act. You just have to kind of like guide the intention of the scene as much as you can. So a lot of it is kind of asking questions or asking them to do things with a different mindset or going into a scene with kind of a slightly different mindset. So instead of saying like, you know, say it like this and make it more angry, you have to kind of think about the scene and what they're doing and say, well, okay, let's do it again, but this time, maybe right before you walked in the door, somebody cut you off in traffic and you're feeling really, your temper is already short going into the scene. And then you'll get a different performance. And then you get them to do it again and you say, okay, this time, you know, I want you to go into the scene, but like in the back of your mind, think that, you know, this character that you're interacting with, you know, cheated on you. And I want, but they don't know that, you know, so like now do the scene differently and you'll get a different performance just because they're entering the scene with a different sort of narrative, starting point, I guess, or different avenue to go into it. And then they get to practice what they do best, which is acting. You know what I mean? So it's not about when you're getting performances, at least for me, it's not about like surgically trying to like manage pitch, if that makes sense, like the tone of voice or how they're saying something. It's more about trying to, I guess, like engineer scenarios that allow them to react in a natural way. And I feel like a lot of what I'm saying is kind of like, I don't know, like very basic directing tips, but it's all, I don't know, it never ceases to amaze me like how much I don't know about directing performance and how much I'm still learning. And so I think those are just some ideas on how you can get performances out of people is familiarity. And then also just kind of like talking through a scene in a way that kind of focuses more on intention rather than and reaction rather than specifically on like, you know, hey, say this way or be angry or, you know, if that makes sense. So that's been my approach so far.
I like that a lot. No, definitely brings a lot of value. Like, you're pretty much saying, if I was to like rephrase it a little bit, is almost making them getting them to the emotional state of where you want them to act it out, right? Is where you're trying to get them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You want to basically help calibrate the entry point into the scene as much as you can. And whether that's emotionally or like even just practically, like it's a lot of weird manipulation, not in a negative way. I had a director friend of mine once say like, oh, basically our job is to basically like manipulate people into doing what we want them to do. And I always thought that was like a kind of a, I always felt like, oh, it sounds so terrible. Like that's such a terrible way to look at it. I'm not trying to manipulate my actors, but it is kind of that. I just think that I've put a more of a positive twist on it in my head where it's like, I'm not nefariously trying to manipulate them into doing what I want them to do. It's more just, I'm trying to, like kind of with them find a way to emotionally engineer the scene. So there is kind of like manipulation happening, but it's with consent, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's positive, right? Like you're trying to help them with their job and getting to the point. You're not manipulating in a way of like evil, where you're like, I want you to do this for me type thing. So it's a positive manipulation.
I will caveat everything I'm saying in one specific way, which is when you're starting out, and this was a big thing for me, is you don't often get to work with experienced actors. And so some of those techniques that would work with more experienced actors may not work with like younger, or not even necessarily younger, but inexperienced actors or people who don't have a lot of on-camera experience. And so that kind of stuff might not always work. They might not necessarily want to think about a scene in a certain way. They might want to be told, hey, tell me if I need to be angrier, or tell me if I need to be faster. You know what I mean? Like they might want mechanical notes. And I think it's your job as a director to kind of understand sort of where your actors are coming from and their experience level and how they want to work. Cause that's the other thing. It's not just you, like you're not going in there and they're just puppets. Like it's a two-way sort of interaction. Like you have to, they're really doing all the work. You're just there to kind of help steer the ship a little bit. So be aware that they're human beings. And when you're doing that, account for their experience level and their comfort level. A lot of early work that I've done, like there's a music video I did for Kelly Clarkson that we shot in like, I want to say 2015, where we used none of the people that we had on camera were actors. They were all real people. And the whole video was about parenthood and motherhood and the relationship between mothers and daughters and fathers and daughters. And so a lot of the talent we had on set were real, quote unquote, real people, not actors. And so it was a completely different style of directing. There was a lot of just like having conversations with them and trying to make them forget the camera's even filming. And then sort of like, you know, kind of pitching scenarios for them to try and just letting them know that they can't fail and doesn't matter what they do, it's not gonna look bad. And that's really a very specific approach, I would say, as opposed to, you know, years later, I worked on a Maren Morris music video and we had Shelley Hennig, who's a very talented actor. She was on Teen Wolf and she's been in a bunch of other shows. And she doesn't need that kind of, you know, sort of handholding, if that makes sense. Like she, you know, you're like, oh, in this scene, you're really emotional. You've this thing that you really wanted, you feel like you have to give it up because your partner doesn't want you to do it. And that was sort of the crux of the scene. And I need you to go into this bathroom and essentially like confront this reality and cry. And she's like, cool, got it. And then she went to another room and then she came back and she's like, okay, I'm ready. And then like, as soon as we started filming, she just like brought it and the tears came and it was like super emotional. And it was like, didn't require me to do any, like, I didn't have to go and like, you know, psychologically engineer that moment for her. She was just able to do it. I just gave her like the scene, you know what I mean? So I think that those are two very different types of performances that require a different style of directing.
Very well explained. What is one of the most important lessons you've learned over your career?
One of the most important lessons. I don't know if it's the most important, but the one that comes to mind is that a lot of what we do is just like make-believe, and it's not that it's not important, like what we do as directors, but it is not, for lack of a better term, like brain surgery. Like it's not a life or death thing. And I think we work in a very, very demanding and like pressurized environment. And sometimes it feels like the weight of the world is on you to kind of get the day, make sure you finish on, you know, you shoot in time, or make sure you get the scene a specific way, or like, oh my God, we don't have the green M&M holder and maybe M&M is not a good example, but we don't have the green bag, we only have this brown bag, and we were imagining it with the green bag. And it's like everything becomes like this, like super, and it can get toxic really quickly. And I've learned that none of that stuff matters enough for me to ever yell at anybody or scream at anybody or throw anything or get mad. If none of it's worth it, you know what I mean? And I try to, my sets tend to be very chill. And even when things go wrong, we try to find kind of a level-headed way of dealing with it and not panic and not kind of create a situation where we're like, because at the end of the day, we're all kind of like, what are we doing? We're just, we're making stuff that is like make-believe. Like everything we do is like make pretend, right? So it's silly to, it feels silly to get like super upset about it. And so that's really, I guess, the most important lesson I learned over time is like, I've really mellowed out over the years. And I've tried to kind of like inject that level of like, I don't know, calmness to a certain degree onto my sets.
That makes sense. Yeah. When we're on sets as well, and, you know, typically I'm producing on a set, I try to help everyone be calm and everything is like, okay. And to be honest, there's no set you go on that something bad doesn't happen. Like something wrong doesn't happen. Someone forgot this or, you know, oops, yeah, this happened. Right. It's just like very normal in this industry for something to go wrong. And I feel like when you take care of the people around you, it just ends up being a more positive environment. And at the end of the day, everyone ends up feeling good, but then they also do even better than if, you know, you put someone down and they're like, I don't want to work for you anymore, you know?
Yeah. I think a good example, you had the gaffer from Everything Everywhere All at Once on a previous episode. And by all accounts, everyone who worked on that shoot, that was a very kind of welcoming set. Everyone kind of, for the most part, all you hear about is how, not that things were necessarily chill, quote unquote, but they weren't like, it was not toxic. It was like a very positive set environment where everyone's opinions and everyone's kind of like, everybody was valued, felt valued. And you could see that you can do that. Cause I think there's an old mentality that it's like, you have to be like super strict. And if you give too much shit about everybody else, then you are compromised. That comes at a cost of like the quality of the work, where it's like you can't make your best work if you're sitting there and you're too worried about how everyone else is feeling all the time. And I think that's kind of a weird misconception. I think that's kind of an old-timey kind of like Hitchcockian sort of like, you know, oh my God, this like, you know, the director has to be this dictator asshole person, and then everyone else has to kind of like fall in line. And I know some directors are still kind of in that world, and it works for some people, but it's not my style. And again, going back to the Everything Everywhere All at Once, it sounds like that movie is hopefully gonna fucking be nominated for an Oscar. So you can make super amazing quality work by being really, really creative, but also just running a set that is positive, you know? Not to say that it wasn't without its challenges. I'm sure it was difficult to make, but hopefully, again, I don't know if it was firsthand experience, but just from hearing about it, it was a pretty positive set. And I feel like I try to bring that same level of positivity to my sets as well.
That makes a lot of sense. This one's very, very similar. Before I move on to the question, I had something in my head and now it came back. It's that, like, that type of like strict mentality is very old school corporate, right? Where it's like, you need to do this, and like none of your employees almost have like any rights, you know?
Right,
old school, and directors obviously like picked up the same way. I feel like it's very left in like the old school type of directors, and the new and upcoming more younger people are just more, you know, open and willing to, you know, push in a different way, in a more positive way than before.
I hope so. Like, I'm obviously not on everybody's set, so I don't know, but I get the impression that that's sort of the direction that things have been trending in for the last several years. Like, and I think it has a net positive effect on the industry, I think, overall.
Very true. Very true. What is one piece of advice you'd give to someone? What is one piece of advice you give to someone starting out in your career?
One piece of advice. I would say diversify your skill sets as much as possible. I think early on, especially, like, being able to do multiple things will just kind of open up your ability to do work. And for me, again, I'm just going to relate it to sort of my experience, but for me, being able to edit as well as, you know, at the very beginning when I was first starting out, I would have to shoot and edit and do visual effects and color correct, you know, and, you know, obviously direct all at the same time. And so I think if I think that that is helpful as a kind of an entry point to kind of be able to do stuff. And also just kind of having those various interests, you know, beyond just strictly directing, let's say, also allows you to maybe collaborate with other people and allows you to see their experiences. So like for me, I got to work with other directors and I still do, you know, I do a lot of opening title sequences. So I get to work with, you know, feature film and television directors and showrunners on their projects that are, you know, at various levels. And that's always interesting. And I learn a lot from those experiences. And even early on as an editor, and then later on as a VFX / online artist, I would learn from other directors and creative teams that I worked with. So I think having kind of a wider net of skills and interests, obviously don't lean into something you're not interested in. If editing is not your thing, that's fine. You don't need to become an editor. But I'm saying like explore it all. Try to explore as much as you can. Try editing something, try shooting something, try you know, doing a little bit of everything on set. So that if you do find that you're interested in something, maybe you can pick up some work doing that job, even if it's not your primary. Let's say you think your main thing is directing, but you find that you're like, oh shit, you know, I'm a really good photographer as well, and I enjoy photography. Then it's like, okay, well, what a great way to get on set and learn by going and doing behind the scenes stills on somebody else's shoot while simultaneously also developing your own directing skills. And then those two things start to inform each other. And so, yeah, I would say in a nutshell, you know, lean into the things that you're enjoying, but don't be afraid to sort of diversify your core kind of skill sets, because it'll just make you a better filmmaker as a whole. And then it also might open up opportunities early on in your career, which is so important.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And at the beginning, you really have a lot of time and you're not working that much too, right? So it's a great opportunity to be able to step in and learn so much. And all the different roles go so hand in hand with each other that understanding some, especially as a director, like understanding someone else's role is very, very key, right? And knowing exactly what they do and being able to, you know, tell them, hey, can you get this done for me? Because you already know that's what they're going to do versus someone who might not know exactly what they do and, you know, be telling the wrong person to do that job instead of telling someone else, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that stuff is super important in that sense, like understanding as much about the industry as a whole and the craft as a whole and what everyone else does. It only makes you better. So yeah, for sure.
What do you wish your younger self knew about your profession?
Oh, okay. So one thing I wish I knew about my profession early on, and I'm talking kind of more specifically about it from a career standpoint, like a kind of a making a living standpoint, not so much creatively, because I think creatively there's a lot we can dive into, but just in terms of like a career path, like something that I wish I knew earlier on is just how much there's so much gatekeeping in this industry. There's a lot of people who sort of control who does what, and not always nefariously. Like it's not always like a negative thing. It's just naturally what happens. And sometimes it's negative, but I think just knowing how important relationships are, like I always thought that it's like, okay, you do amazing work and somebody will notice you and then you'll get work. And that can be true. And I have been approached randomly by people just because they saw something I had done and it showed up on Instagram or showed up on YouTube or on Vimeo or something or Behance. And yes, that has happened, but that's not how most of the work that I get comes from. Most of the work comes from people that I've either worked with before or somebody recommended me to somebody else. And so I think my social skills and my sort of general willingness to collaborate and be sort of a good collaborator and a person that it's like enjoyable to work with and is a problem solver while still maintaining like a very strong creative point of view. I wish that I had kind of worked on that a little bit more when I was younger, when I was starting out, because I think I cared more about just like, I'm just going to do cool shit and then eventually people are going to hire me. And I think I learned sort of very slowly over the years that it's like, oh, you know what? A lot of it is like right place at the right time and knowing the right people. And sometimes it's not even like knowing the right person who's going to give you the job. It's just you happen to know somebody who just knows somebody else who then tell somebody else about how good of a director you are or whatever. So I think just being more open to making connections and being kind of like understanding the sort of networking side of things, and trying learning how to do that sort of more effortlessly and not being too like precious about it. Cause it's kind of like it's kind of hard to like, it's one thing to say like, hey, be better at networking, but also it's, you don't want to force it. So it's kind of a balance between just like being genuinely like a person who's interesting to work with and nice to talk to and engaging, and doing that naturally, and also strategically knowing when to reach out to people, when to set up, you know, lunches, when to, you know, kind of like try and like maneuver into a certain social circle. And, you know, it can't be so strategic that it's like soulless, if that makes sense, because people will catch up to that and then, you know, you don't, that's not very productive.
That makes sense. We talked heavily on that with Andrew, who was on the last podcast, an executive producer. And yeah, it's genuinely just being, you know, caring towards the other person and nice. And then if the relationship takes off, it takes off. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's not really like every relationship you should be forcing and trying to get something out of it, right? As long as you're nice, yeah, the word gets around and people will end up recommending you.
And just be genuine about it, because, you know, as a director, I get reached out like primarily get reached. So the people that reach out to me, I should say, are like, sometimes will be DPs and editors. So cinematographers and editors who will want to, who are looking for work, right? They're looking for a new director to collaborate with. And you can very much tell the ones that are just like, and composers will do this as well. Pretty much anyone kind of on a film set that is trying to get more work that works directly with a director will reach out. And a lot of times it's like, hey man, love your work, would love to collaborate. But like, you can tell that they haven't really looked at the work or care about the work. They are just kind of like sending as many emails out to as many different people and trying to get work. And I think that's not a great way to do it. I think if you genuinely, I'd say only reach out to people you genuinely want to work with, and look up their work and, you know, kind of explain to them why you want to work with them. Don't just say like, I love your work, I'd love to work with you. Like, kind of point out something specific that they've done that really spoke to you. Maybe suggest a way for you guys to collaborate, not just like, hey, I'd love to collaborate. Like, maybe there's something specific that you want to work on together. I think that's, those types of approaches are always better. And I try to apply that on my end as well. Like, if I want to work with a specific artist for a music video or a specific ad agency, like, it's rare that I'll just be like, actually, I don't think I've ever done it. And if I have, it's was probably not effective, which is like send a billion emails to a billion different people and just say, hey, love your work, would love to work with you, because it doesn't really come with any sort of like meaning behind it if it's that generic. And so try not to cast a wide net necessarily. Try to focus on the people that you genuinely want to work with. And they'll reciprocate. Like, I'll often respond to people that message me if I feel like they genuinely care about the work that I do to some degree, and they're not just sending a cold sort of automated email, if that makes sense.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. Putting a lot of effort into the person you're genuinely trying to work with. And usually if they're reaching out to, you know, a director like yourself where, you know, they do appreciate your work, but then they don't mention anything about it, it just seems, you know, not genuine and just a cold blast to every single person, which we get a lot of the times too, right? And every one out of 30 will be like, oh, like, I enjoyed your work and I really enjoyed this project because of this, this, and that, right? And I'd love to work for you for this reason, right? Yeah. Which just works way better.
I think if you're thinking about reaching out to people, just be authentically yourself as much as possible. Don't try to be someone else or try to be somebody that they might, you know what I mean? Like, you'll attract the people that, you know, that are a good fit. So it's important that you get out there and you try to make connections, but like, don't try to like find kind of a boilerplate sort of like, here's what I should say to make someone respond to me, you know what I mean? And so a lot, like I said, it's a very fine balance between being authentic, but also putting yourself out there.
I love it. Where can listeners find you online?
I think I'm mostly active on Instagram. So that's probably the best place to find me. It's my first and last name. So it's ALON_ISOCIANU. And my studio is Reactive. It's basically spelled Reactive without an E at the end. So our Instagram is get_reactive. So it's GET_REACTIV. And then my website is another good place to go if you want to look at my directing work. It's just my first and last name.com. So alonisochanu.com. And yeah, once you get on my website, you can find all the other socials if you want to find me on Vimeo and all that other fun stuff.
Beautiful. Any last words of advice you would like people to know?
Oof. I'm trying to think of something that would have been good for me to know when I was starting out. Like take care of your mental health. I think that's a big one. I think that's like not something that anybody talked about when I was first starting out. It was kind of like very much grind culture, like, you know, rise and grind, like work all the time. And I think that getting off social media and not comparing yourself to everybody else all the time is a good idea. And it'll also, I think, make you generally less self-conscious. And when you're less self-conscious, you do better work, I think. And so I think a way to kind of help your creativity is to sort of disconnect sometimes. I guess that would be a piece of advice. It's hard for me to give like super general advice to people because I feel like everyone comes from a different place. I will say that if anyone who's listening looks at my work and sees something in it and it has a question, a specific question, like I'm always open to that stuff. So if anybody wants to DM me on Instagram or email me through the forum on my site, I usually respond. I love chatting with new filmmakers and finding out kind of how they are looking to sort of advance in their career. And so I think that would be my biggest advice is like, don't be afraid to ask for advice. So instead of giving you a general advice, I think I'll just say if anybody wants specific advice or any sort of like feedback on their work or anything like that, my DMs are open.
That's awesome. I love that you're doing that for people. It'll be a lot of help. So yeah, that's awesome, man. I really appreciate you know, coming on here. There was a lot of value. I think we went over the hour mark, which I try not to do with everyone. yeah, no,
sorry we're just still, yeah.
Oh, no, it's not.
I talk
I'm
a lot.
I'm sorry for going over the hour mark on you. No, I like it because we had so much to talk about and I can keep going and going on about this, but we will definitely, you know, have you back in the next year or two to see where you're at, but we really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to do it. Good luck with everything. And yeah, thanks for asking me to do this. We'll see you soon, hopefully.
Sounds good. Yes, I will clip out some stuff and we'll see you on Instagram. Cheers.
All right. Peace. Cheers. Bye.